Well, thanks for your invitation. It's lovely to be here. I used to come to Northern Ireland about twice a year, and I always really enjoyed it and looked forward to my trips across on EasyJet. But then I retired, and as many of you know, I got busier and busier and busier through retirement, but unfortunately, I didn't come back here for a while, and that's a great shame. Now, I have been a member of a Presbyterian church, you'll be interested to know, an international Presbyterian church in London, church started by Francis Schaeffer, and that name will make sense to quite a few of you. And I had 4 years in that Presbyterian church, and that was really good, and I enjoyed that. So I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for all coming out tonight. It's a bit cold out there, but it's nice and warm in here. Now, I want to just go back and repeat something I said just now. Look, I have not got all the answers, all right? If you've come hoping for me to tell you what to do, what'll work, I have not got all the answers. And even if I did have all the answers for England, they would not necessarily be the right answers for here, all right? So I have not got all the answers. I want to share with you ideas. Ideas that have developed in my mind for 15 years, really, of trying to work with agencies and churches in this whole area. And as I say, if you disagree with me, that's fine. Even if you come up afterwards and tell me you disagree with me, that's also fine, all right? I want to help you to think and to think about things that maybe you haven't thought of before. So anyway, this is the book. This is the book that's caused all the trouble. Well, not exactly, but this is the book. Now, I'm not a natural writer at all. I'm an engineer by background. So when I write a bit like an engineering report. So the disadvantage of that is that if you read this, you won't find it very descriptive and flowery and all that sort of thing, all right? But the advantage is that it's short. It's less than 100 pages. And it's concise. And that's good for busy people, I suppose. So I'm quite pleased about that. And as I said before, it's a sort of summation of my 15 years with Global Connections after I'd led Arab World Ministries. Now, in the 1980s, Global Connections came up with this strapline: mission at the heart of the church, the church at the heart of mission. And I can't remember quite how it came up. I may have had some input in, but I'm not entirely sure about that. But this was something that we grabbed onto. This is good. This expresses, as well as we could possibly work out at that time, what we wanted to do. We wanted to see mission at the heart of the church and the church at the heart of mission. And personally, that was great for me, because I've been employed just to try and do that, really. So this was a very, very, very special slogan for me, and has been ever since. So what is the church? What's the church for? What shape should the church take? Over the centuries, the church has developed. Nothing wrong with that. But some of those developments have been good and helpful and structural and all sorts of things. But other developments have been less helpful. And some have been positively damaging to what the church is all about, particularly with regard to mission. Let's look at scripture a moment. Acts chapter 2, you know these verses very well. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together, and they had everything in common, selling their possessions and goods they gave to everyone in need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number those that were being saved. Now, how does that compare with your church today? Well, some things will be fairly similar, I suppose. Your church does teaching, and there, obviously there was some teaching here, although I'd much prefer your church to be a learning church rather than a teaching church, but that's another issue, and a bit of a hobby horse of mine. Fellowship, yeah, you have fellowship. I'm sure you have some fellowship. Communion, you do that regularly on a, probably it's set out so many times or whatever. Prayer, you do that in times, probably not enough, as much as you like, but you do some of that. But signs and wonders, maybe. But when it happens, you're probably surprised. Sharing everything. Most churches really haven't sorted out what that really means in today's world and in today's economy. Meeting daily. Well, yeah, my church is beginning to do that virtually, not face-to-face, but we're meeting regularly, daily, through WhatsApp and other things like that, which is really, really very exciting, and that's superb. Held in high esteem, well, that didn't last very long, but on and off. Infectious evangelism, yes, were people were being saved. So how does it work out with your church? Now, you see, this church in Acts 2 was not a perfect church, was it? By no means. Did they really know who Jesus was? Probably not, because they argued about it for the next 200 years or so. Did they really know God as Trinity? Well, I think almost certainly not. My son is a historical theologian, and we're doing through a course in our church at the moment about Trinity and how that has developed. And, well, it took an awful long time. Did the believers here know what mission was all about? No, they didn't. They thought it was all Jewish. And, in fact, although Peter had been with Jesus for 3 years, it took a vision on a rooftop in Joppa when he was waiting for lunch before he realized it was not just Jewish. So there were lots and lots of things that they got wrong. I went to a very exciting meeting a little while ago, and it was in London. It was a memorial service for the martyrs of the Iranian church. And this is the leaflet. And there were 8 martyrs that they met together at Westminster Chapel. And they had the pictures of these martyrs up, and a lot of their family were there, some wives of the martyrs, certainly lots of sons and daughters of the martyrs and cousins and that sort of thing. And we remembered these martyrs. Now, that's very interesting, because you probably know that actually the fastest growing church today is in Iran. And the thing about that church in Iran that's growing so fast is, first, it's got no buildings. Secondly, it's got very little hierarchy. No one is appointed. People get together and say to an individual, "Will you lead us?" It's not appointed from outside. No little hierarchy. And the vast number of those churches are led by women. But they're inspired by martyrs. Oh dear, we've lost so much. A friend of my wife's in Finland has a lot of Afghans coming and becoming converted and coming into his church, and he's discipling them. And my wife said to him, what are you discipling them about? And he said, "We teach them how to die. We teach them how to die." Now that's different, I guess, from your church. I'm only guessing, but I think that's probably different from your church. Okay, well, I think, and my book states, that I think there are 2 significant historical events that have affected the whole relationship between the church and mission. I believe that Christendom took mission out of the church, and the launch of the evangelical missionary movement, which we often link to William Carey, yes? The launch of that took the church out of mission. And what we have to do is to look at those events and say, now, those 2 events were not entirely negative. There were some good things that came out of them. But as far as mission was concerned, they were very negative in some areas. And we need to look at that, and we need to say why and how, and we need to work back and say, how are we going to compensate for that? How are we going to put back into that what these things took out? Now, we're not going to deal with the second one at all tonight, because we just haven't got time. You'll have to read the book for that. But we're going to talk about mission being taken out of the church. How has Christendom taken mission out of the church? Well, Christendom, of course, simplest way of talking about Christendom, defining Christendom, is institutionalized Christianity. Institutionalized Christianity. The Emperor Constantine, where are his dates on the screen there, he takes the blame for all this. Now, Constantine got converted and became a Christian. And we can only react by hallelujah for that, because that's good when anybody becomes a Christian. But this Constantine decided that as a result of that, Christianity should become the official religion of the Roman Empire. And that had consequences. That had consequences. The church became established. The church became linked to the state. The church suddenly had power and authority. And when you have power and authority, what do you want to do? You want to demonstrate it. So what do? You build buildings. And you build big buildings, the biggest you can afford. And they are high buildings. And they are buildings that really show off how much power you've got. Okay, so you've built these buildings, and these are great. And so what are you going to do in the buildings? Well, you've got to do things in buildings. So you've got people you need to do. So you've got to have special people to do things in special buildings, all right? So you choose these priests, and you dress them up in special clothes. And you give them special words to say. And you give them a special status because they are special. Because the church now is official. And it has power. And it has authority. And it has all those sorts of things. And you get liturgies and robes and all that sort of stuff. It's interesting, isn't it? Alan Crowder says, we will not fully understand the current malaise of Western Christianity until we come to terms with the phenomenon of Christendom in all its many dimensions. Our Christian past shapes our Christian present. Decisions taken in the past shape our current predicaments and possibilities. Now, a great friend of mine is a guy called Stuart Murray Williams, and he's written about post-Christendom and about all sorts of things. But he says this, he says, these are some of the immediate effects of what Constantine did, all right? This is what happened immediately. The mood of the Christians was buoyant. Of course it was. They weren't persecuted anymore. So they were excited. They could wander around. They could tell people they were Christians. They didn't have to hide, all right? So they were buoyant. But they immediately became intolerant of pagans. Just as the Romans used to be intolerant of them, they were now intolerant of pagans. Shame, isn't it? That they developed a crusading mentality, using force very often against others. They went round smashing idols and shrines and that sort of thing. These are Christians doing this, because of the power that they suddenly got. They identified church and state. They established a Christian army. Can you believe that? Very early on, the Christians who now had this power of hurry established a Christian army. What do they think Jesus might have thought about that? And the landowners forced conversion. You know, if you don't become a Christian, you'll lose your job. In the same way that in many parts of the world today, if a Muslim ceases to be a Muslim and decides to be a Christian, he will lose his job because he's Muslim. But, you know, this same thing happened early in Christendom, and they started wrangling over creeds. What a sad thing to happen so soon after the beginning of Christendom. And then some of the, obviously, the more long-term effects of Christendom. First of all, there were huge numbers of nominal Christians. Of course there were. You didn't want to be anything else than a Christian because it got you jobs and it got you this and you didn't get in difficulties and this was the thing to be, yeah? Of course it was. Preaching became important. Now, when I say preaching there, I've put it in quotes, what I really meant was oratory became important. You know, the standing up in this great big building on these high steps with all these clothes and preaching, that became important. And you wanted to do it better than the next guy. It wasn't a matter of communicating truth or anything like that. It was doing this thing in this big place because we could. So preaching in that sense became important. Miracles decreased. Wow. Are you surprised? The influential witness of martyrs was missing. Of course it was. There weren't any martyrs anymore. And they had been so significant, just as they are so significant today in the Iranian church. All right? And then there were these holy men, ascetics. And attendance at the services was forced. You had to go. You were required to go. So generally over time, these were some of the things that developed. So in a sense, if everybody had to go to church and everybody was flocking to be a Christian because that was the thing to do, what was the point of mission? There was no real point of mission left. So we'd end up with a situation where... The church has changed from being all about community, meeting together daily, weekly, sharing possessions, building relationships, house-based, and all that sort of stuff about community, and in many ways, in sometimes of a secret community. There were times when they really had to hide, and that, of course, brought them together more as a community. Yeah? Instead of that, after Christendom, it became all about services. Services, buildings that were consecrated, that were special. Furniture for services, altars, fonts, all that sort of stuff. People to lead services, special people. people who, many of them, I'm sure, enjoyed the status that they were given. A hierarchy, a liturgy. The church becomes a building for services and not a community. I wonder whether in our communities, in our society, church started to be thought of as the building rather than the community. I mean, as Christians, we know that the church is the community, not the building. But somewhere or other, out there, the message got out that the church is this building. And I suppose it comes back to this, that the people were the church when they were in the building. I suppose that's the way it worked out in the end. People were the church when they were in the building. But what a sad way of thinking about church. So anyway, here's the crowd is again. In 529, the Emperor Justinian had issued an edict requiring all inhabitants of the empire to be baptized and to attend services of worship. In a Christendom society, worship was unavoidable. Thanks to government compulsion, mission was unnecessary. Do you see what I mean? Christendom takes mission out of the church. And I love this. This is one of my favorite quotes of all time. This is Stuart Murray Williams again. He says this: Constantine's invitation to the church to become a religious department of the empire revolutionized its missiology. This is particularly evident in the evangelistic dimension of mission. From being a powerless, sometimes persecuted minority that nevertheless could not refrain from talking about Jesus and his impact on their lives, the church had become a powerful institution, able to impose its beliefs and practices on society. Evangelism was no longer a winsome invitation to a deviant and dangerous way of living and into a puzzling and yet strangely attractive community. That's a lovely definition of evangelism, isn't it, don't you think? Evangelism, no longer a winsome invitation into a deviant and dangerous way of living and into a puzzling and yet strangely attractive community. Mission now involved ensuring doctrinal conformity, enforcing church attendance, enshrining moral standards in the criminal law, and eradicating choice in the area of religion. Methods used include education, persuasion, inducement, and coercion. That's a lovely phrase, a lovely quote. Explains exactly how things changed. And of course, the heritage we've got today, and it's lasted right to today, that to go to church is to go to a service. Isn't it? And our services, in many places, are more based on an Old Testament temple format than on a New Testament community format. Aren't they? I mean, I hear people in England a lot say, oh, I'm going to God's house. Going to God's house? That's Old Testament. Jesus said, where two or three of you are gathered together, in other words, where you're gathered together, where you meet, in your place, on your terms, however you are, dressed or whatever, you know, I will come and be with you. He joins us in the New Testament. We don't have to go to his place, as they did in the Old Testament, the temple and the tabernacle. And all sorts of, and we sit in rows looking at the necks of people in front of us. That shouts at Christendom, shouting all the time. That's about observing. That's not about being involved. And I think we have all sorts of problems in that area. So the results of all this is this Christian comfort and this protection by the society, by the society then, and to a certain extent by the society now. Established Christian norms and culture, gave Christianity power, dominated by leaders, Christian pressure to convert, and the church was a gathered church and not a scattered church. Now, in one of the churches I was at once, the leader of the church was leading the church, and he stopped halfway through his sermon, and he said this. I want you to look at these two. He says, what is the difference between a church-shaped mission and mission-shaped church? And he gave us 2 or 3 minutes to just chat about it with people sitting around us, you see. I'm not going to do that because we haven't got time. But he then called us back together again and told us what the answer was, or what he thought the answer was. And he's basically said, church-shaped mission is about come and join us. Be like us. We need more bums on seats here. Mission-shaped church is about we want to reach out to you. We want you to meet Jesus where you are. There are no barriers, status, education, ethnicity. And one he thought was empire building, and the other was kingdom building. I don't know what you think about that. But anyway, just something for you to take away. Now, the next question is, what is the difference between doing mission and being missional? I don't know whether you like the idea, the word missional. Maybe you don't. Some people do. Some people don't like the idea missional. I think it's quite a helpful phrase. Doing mission and being mission. You see, we all do mission. I guess all your churches do mission. How do you do mission? Well, you post a check to someone to support a missionary. You pray for someone who's serving God in mission somewhere. You send people to help with evangelistic projects somewhere, beach mission or something. You sign a petition for justice or something like that, I don't know. Or you help build a hospital somewhere in the world. Doing mission. Doing mission is fairly easy, really. You can do it really without leaving your seat, but you can do it. And I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm not saying it's unhelpful. I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. No. Yes, you should. But it's a bit different from being missional, which I think is something that's, it's not just adjusting our priorities. It's a matter of thinking differently about the way we do church. Now, I want to just go on and explore this a little bit further now, because I've been very helped in this by a guy called Mike Frost. Now, Mike Frost, he's an Australian. He's an Australian Baptist, if you can cope with that. But anyway, he's written quite a number of books. These are two of them mentioned on the screen. But he's been very helpful in helping me to think of the way churches get things wrong. Put it that way. Mike Frost says this. He says there are four key elements in terms of church life. And these are the four key elements of church life. And he reckons that most things can be slotted in under these somehow or other. One is worship. Seeing God's praise, reading the word, prayers of adoration and thanks, worship. And other things as well, of course. The second part of church life is building Christian community. In other, bringing people together as brothers and sisters, a reconciliation between people who are having difficulty, interceding, intercession, prayer, intercession, and that sort of thing. The third thing he reckons is making disciples, learning together, challenging lifestyles, changing lifestyles, all that sort of thing. And the fourth is mission, reaching out into the local community and across the world. And Mike says that these things are all equally important. They're all equally important. They're all, the four things are all equally important in terms of what the church is all about. And so, but what he says we've done is that we have taken one of them, we've taken worship, and we've made worship what he calls, and I think it's a very helpful phrase, the organizing function of our churches. So we take these four and we make worship the organizing function. Now, let me remind you, he's saying, we're not saying that one is any more important than the other at all. He wants to say they're all absolutely equally important. We've got to put effort into all of them and they're all important. But he says, we make worship the organizing function. And it becomes the organizing function so that the other things are actually around it, are fitted into it. And if you think to yourself of the way your church works, I suspect you find that's true. So the church, we're there building community. How do we build community? Well, we build community so often at our worship event. I mean, if you're an Anglican, and I know you're not Anglicans, but the Anglicans have this peace. Do Presbyterians have a peace? Sometimes? No peace in Presbyterian church. Anyway, yeah, they have this peace where they all go around and hug each other or shake hands, and they are it's a great thing, and it's very good, and it's all part of building the Christian community. It's all actually recognizing each other. All right. They meet as you do for coffee and things after the service. Why? To build community, to help people feel together. They have an emphasis on Sunday, on attendance on Sunday morning. Come along to church Sunday morning. This is part of building our community. There's a strong welcome to church, and it's all geared around this building Christian community. But then also making disciples is also built around the worship event. Worship is the organizing factor. So that the teaching, the sermon comes in the worship event. And for many churches, that's the main sort of teaching, instruction, making disciples event of the week. It happens within the context of worship. And then other things are linked with it. If you do things midweek, it may well be linked back to what happened Sunday morning. And that's the way it happens in many churches. Maybe not in yours, but in many churches. And prayer ministry follows the worship service. It's all part of the same thing. And the same thing in terms of mission, you see. Traditionally, the church has encouraged people to bring other people in to hear the gospel from professionals. Okay? You want someone to become a Christian? Bring them to church. That's the traditional way in which we've been thinking. Excuse me. So we have evangelistic services. In England, we've had this back to church Sundays. That happened for a few years and was quite good. The goal of mission is often seen as more bums on seats in the worship event. And of course, this results in a very pastoral type model, because worship is essentially for those on the inside. A church where worship is the organizing function is a church based on a pastoral model. It's drawing people together. Okay. Now, what Mike Frost says is this. He says worship should not be the organizing function of the church. He says that mission is to be the organizing function of the church. Now, we're not saying one is more important than the other. Okay? We're saying what becomes the organizing function. What determines the way the thing works and the priorities of it and how it fits together. So he thinks, you see, that there we are. So wish I like that bit. Mission should become the organizing function of the church, and that needs to change. If we're going to change from doing mission to being missional, I think, means where mission is the organizing function of the church. And the other things fit in around that organizing function. So in a sense, worship fits in that. So we worship because of who God is. He's a missionary God. We worship because God is doing great things in mission. We worship because of the testimony of those who come to faith. Now, I don't know about you, but in our church, we have a great mission band, worship band, and we do. But worship in our church is never as great as when somebody stands up and says, "My friend has just become a Christian." Then we worship because it's something that God has done. When people say, "Oh, you know, last week I prayed about someone, and my prayers have been answered for this or for that or for some related to mission." God calls us to be involved in His mission. And so Mike Frost says, and I think I agree with him, that mission needs to be the organizing function of our church, and these other things need to fit in. To that, and worship can fit in an amazing way to that. And then again, you see, building Christian community can fit into that, because if we're involved in mission, then we desperately need each other. We can't do without each other if we're definitely in mission. People come up to me in my church quite often and say, "Look, I've got a really problem. I'm trying to share the gospel with this guy, and he's not helping. And I've run out of ideas, and I need your help. I need your help. It's mission related, and he needs my help." And we pray for him, And so we need prayer for each other. We need action together to build a community. We are empowering people for mission. That's what it's all about. We're empowering people for mission. That's what building a Christian community. And discipleship, making disciples, because why are you making disciples? Because when people get out into the work situation and people come up and say, how does a God who's good allow suffering? You've got to have something to say. So in fact, you need to be taught. You need to be taught because of mission. You need to be taught. So mission needs to be the organizing function. We need teaching because of the mission we're in. We need to live consistent lives that will recommend the gospel. We need to keep each other accountable in all these ways. So I think that being missional or having mission at the heart of the church means, in structural terms, it means mission being the organizing function of the church rather than worship. Okay, that's the end of the first bit. Around your tables, you've got some time to recuperate and relax and answer those questions. What? Do you agree that Christendom removed mission from the church? I'd be surprised if you didn't in somewhere or other, but you can discuss that. In what ways are you aware of that in your church? Where are the aspects of criticism still in the way your church operates? How does Christendom survive in your church's structures and practices? Do you agree that there's a difference, big difference between doing mission and being missional? And do you find the operating function concept that I've talked about helpful? Discuss.